co-author, David, yeah. Most of you probably know him. And I promise there are actually no spreadsheets involved in this, so if anybody needs to leave, that's okay. A ballpark like Dodger Stadium here is a really beautiful place. We've got sunshine and green grass and great athletes demonstrating their skills. I expect just about everybody here can agree with me on that. Where we might diverge a little bit is that I believe the complete experience includes the fans in the stands as well. The child in their souvenir cap at her first game at the park, hoping that her dad's going to catch one of those foul balls for her. Or the little league team, all of them with their gloves, all hoping to catch the long foul ball because it has to be a really long one because the little leaguers are always way, way, way out there. Or the old friends that have been meeting every Sunday for a decade sitting in their season ticket seats. And even the businessman at the business person special trying to do business with one eye on the game and the other eye on his iPhone. And of course, the ones that are nearest and dearest to me are all the fans who have bought a scorecard and are keeping score. These last people really have a special place in my heart because they open a window onto American baseball fans for me. And if we look at this, to me, the scorecard is very much like the ballpark. In the center, you've got the game, and if it were in color, of course, it would be green. And around the edge, you've got the fans in the stands, as it were, all the advertisements. We've got beer, of course, hats, which were very important this time period with the jewelers, and in 1908 in Boston, don't forget the dog food, which I thought was kind of a neat ad. These advertisements are targeted at a very specific population. They're targeted at the fans in the stands, this wonderful captive audience. So when we look at old scorecards, they can tell us about these Americans, because these ads are targeted at us. To be a little more analytical, what do they tell us about ourselves? Is it geography? Do we see differences among cities? Are Bostonians different from Detroiters? Or was Terrence Mann right when he said, baseball, Ray, it's how we mark time? Does 1922 Washington, how does it compare to 1933 in Cincinnati? So do we see the rise of new industries? Do we see the impact of new laws, changing social norms? How about world events? We looked at hundreds, maybe thousands of scorecards to try to answer these questions. So let's talk about the data. The scorecard images, of course, come from the collection of retro sheets. So I have many of you here today to thank for them. Joe Stilwell, Luke Kramer, Jim Wollenhouse, Mark Stang, Bob Yar in particular. I used a lot of the scorecards that you have collected, so thank you very much. Secondly, for those of you who are participating in RetroSheet, you know that these scorecards were not collected for my purposes. And I will say that some of you love me a little bit more than others. I love to see examples like this, and I know you people in the back, way, way there in the upper deck, can't see this very well. But for me, here's the cover of the scorecard, here's that game stuff that you guys are worried about. And all of the stuff, the fans in the stands here, this scorecard has everything for me. It's wonderful. But as I've been practicing this, I can take a scorecard like this and tell you, oh, that's a Gem Razor ad down there. This is an ad for the Hotel Astor. This is Shortly Warner. They were a big clothier in New York City for a couple of decades at least. And, of course, Chesterfield. So I've learned to take ones like that. But sometimes I'm just not feeling the love. You guys were not thinking of me when you copied. So I don't know who copied this one. I don't want to know who copied it. So we've chosen to look at scorecards from the late 1940s back to the very end of the 19th century. And this decision was based partly on the makeup of the RetroSheet collection and partly on the nature of the scorecards as they changed. The post-World War II RetroSheet collection comes largely from teams' official scorebooks, and as well as the sports writers and other people who had their own scorebooks, who weren't purchasing scorecards at the ballpark, and hence there weren't any advertisements in them. And at the same time, the scorecards sold at the park were becoming more complex. So in the middle of the century, you start to get more complex scorecards that end up looking like magazines or yearbooks, and they do have the scoring in the center still, but we start getting a lot more variation. So it seemed that the middle of the century was a good time to cut off the study in order that the scorecards that we had were much more comparable to each other in format. Okay, now as a final reminder about baseball of this era, first half of the 20th century, there were 16 teams in 10 cities. And that's when you put Brooklyn in with New York. Now, I know you purists are going to say, separate entity, nothing to do with each other. That's an argument for another day. It's not for today. And if you look at this distribution, of course, when I say that this is about American baseball fans, this is about American baseball fans who are going to the park. So we're really not talking about anybody in the West or anybody in the South. This was really the northeastern quadrant of the United States. So geographically pretty limited here. Okay, so our starting lineups are in, the ceremonial first pitch is thrown. What have we learned? First, transcending both space and time, and in stark contrast to fans today, sorry guys, but this is true, fans in the first half of the 20th century were a very dapper crowd. And this is reflected in the advertisements as well. In Cleveland here, we have hats and suits from tailors, more hats, clothiers, and hatters. So of the 8 ads on this scorecard, 4 of them have to do with being well-dressed here. And here in New York, we've got Truly Warner, the one that was cut off in that last one, hats and shoes. We got our gem razor blades, too, so that you guys can look nice as well. And it's not until the 1940s we start seeing clothiers also advertising to women. And this thing of being well-dressed is probably the biggest thing that we saw consistently through this whole time period. It's a very universal theme. Okay. Now with everybody dressed appropriately for the day at the park, did I just lose? Oh, shout out. There we go. Dressed appropriately for a day at the park, let's consider the differences between place to place and what we can see. This part of the study actually was very fun for me because it almost became a game. When you see a ball, a scorecard, not looking at the game part, how quickly can you figure out what city it's from? Well, instantly, if you see the Astor Hotel or the Astor Roof, you know that you're in New York City, that Astor banner. And actually, if you see the Hotel Astor here, this is Brooklyn, folks. This is a Brooklyn scorecard. And I think this dog here is actually advertising finer socks. So it's not just hats and shoes and suits. It's right down to your socks there. Fusel's Ice Cream here. If you have Fusel's Ice Cream, you are in Washington, D.C., which when you're probably at the park, you'll also have an Alf sausage. And on the way home from the game, you're going to stop and pick up a loaf of Wonder Bread. Those are kind of flags for Washington, D.C. How about Detroit in the 1920s? Detroit has 8 ads, 4 around each. And besides our automobile ad, our Buick ad here at the bottom, we have 3 ads that show up not only in the scorecards year after year, but in the same positions in the scorecards. And those are the Rite & K Jewelers selling watches, strap watches, by the way, Payne Weber with stocks and bonds, and Leith & Young Tailors. Those 3 advertisers are in the same position year after year in the Detroit cards. If we have the CalCrim Detective Bureau here, you're in Cincinnati. Okay, that's theirs. And then, of course, in Pittsburgh, Iron City Beer. It's a nice big banner ad. They always had a big banner for a local brew, and it's that local brew. Okay. Now, there are a couple of advertisers that are ubiquitous. Now, first, if cigarettes, if measured by advertising space, are the primary vice of baseball fans at this time period. We can look in 1931 here. You can see ads for Camel cigarettes, Old Gold at the bottom here, Lucky's, Lucky Strikes, and the brand for baseball is Chesterfield. That's a little Chesterfield ad there. But often Chesterfield had multiple ads in the same card. Here, like I said, we've got a lot of tobacco, plug tobacco. This is the top half of the card, see the staples where you fold it in half when you're keeping score. You've got a Chesterfield ad at the bottom on the home side and at the top on the road. And if I show you the more of the card, here's the other half of the card. But actually, you know, there's only 8 ads on this whole card, and 3 of them are identical Chesterfield ads. And that was not uncommon. Okay. And aside for you Mad Men fans, remember when Don Draper has to sell Lucky Strike cigarettes? And it's 1964, and the American Cancer Society has just come out with their big report on cigarettes and cancer. He seemingly comes up with the line about Luckies are special because they're toasted. Well, baseball fans knew they were toasted in 1929. Okay, so Draper was way behind the time. He hasn't been going to the ball games, I guess. No, another brand, which at first I thought was ubiquitous, but turns out to really only show up in 2 cities, but 2 cities that cover 5 teams, so you see a lot of these ads, was the Gem Razor Blades. Indeed, yes, we have our Chesterfield ads, but Gem Razor Blade down the side here, and this ad across the bottom is also a Gem Razor Blade ad. The Safety Razor shows up in both Boston and in New York programs for decades. Here's Gem Razor Blades again. Now this is a New York one, and there's only 1 ad. In Boston, there were often 2 for the razor blades. Now, there were occasions, relatively rare ones, where other razor blades were advertised in other cities, but they were pretty few and far between, and Gem was clearly the razor blade of baseball fans. Okay, let's change gears a little bit and check in with Terrence Mann. Do we mark the time with our baseball scorecards? Of course we do. Of course we do. One of the best ways to demonstrate this is through innovations in transportation. I mean, fans have to get to the ballpark, right? I'm going to start with a little duck into the late 19th century before the automobile. Here's an 1889 Chicago card. We've got Victoria cabs here, horse-drawn cabs, and also regional rail. So there's a Monon rail line here. And then in 1897 in New York, now this isn't the first baseball ads, but this particular card has 3 very interesting bicycle ads. Spalding Bicycles with the Christie anatomical saddle there, Mark. We're worried about comfort in the 1890s as well. So this is a big one across the very top of the scorecard. This is the same scorecard. We also have the 3 ball bearing Comet bicycle and the Cleveland bicycle down here. So 3 bicycle ads in the same scorecard. So we knew how they were traveling in New York at the time. Oops, I hope that wasn't important. When the first of the automobile companies that we know today were being founded, bicycles and trains still dominate. So in Boston in 1903, we still have bicycles and regional rail, the Boston to Albany, New York Central lines. When we get to 1905, there are cars to hire, and I know you people in the back are not going to be able to read this, so that you can tour the beautiful suburbs of Boston by hiring an automobile. And by 1909, we've got taxi cabs, Thomas cars, which were produced in Buffalo, New York, were advertising in, of course, this is a Boston scorecard here. And although the mass production of automobiles starts in the U.S. with Oldsmobile in 1901, followed very quickly within that decade by Ford and General Motors and many others, older forms of transportation are still important for decades. This is a 1929 St. Louis ad. So we have our Buicks. We have automobiles here. This is a bus line. I'll show you the rest of that ad in a second. They put out a flag on the bus so that you know that bus is going to the ballpark on game days. We also have Frisco rail lines, 2 fast trains daily. The other half of the card, here's the rest, take the green bus to the ballpark. And another rail line, Springfield and Peoria. So we have a big overlap of different types of transportation still early on. But by the 1920s, the automobile ads start to become much more commonplace. In 1924, in Cleveland, we've got the Dodge Brothers advertising. In 1928, Detroit, we've got the Packard. We've got, there's the jewelers again. The Pontiac in Oakland, I think it's bought up by Pontiac as well. And of course, that Buick ad that's still down here. By the way, there's Payne Weber, Leith and Young, and Wright Keg, so we know what city we're in. Okay. we have plenty of automobiles, and if we recall, of course, at St. Louis, we're in with our Buick. So what's next after bicycles, trains, and automobiles? In 1936 in St. Louis, we got our first airline ad, Fly Chicago. This is American Airlines. In 37, we add to American Airlines, Chicago, and Southern Airlines. But remember, St. Louis at the time is the most remote major league city. I didn't see any other ads for airlines in St. Louis for any other years or in any other cities, actually. Okay. So baseball scorecards note other historic events in their advertising as well. The first major world event that we expect to note in our study was World War I. Unfortunately, in the five-year time period from 1915 to 1919, surrounds World War I, we have fewer than 10 scorecard images, and most of them are incomplete from what I could see. There wasn't any mention of the World War, but of course, like I said, they were incomplete. On the other hand, we do see a change when the Volstead Act brings us Prohibition. So if we go before Prohibition here in Pittsburgh in 1902, we're selling whiskey and rye, wines and liquors. In 1919 in Boston, Harvard beer, two more beers. There's even an ad here for buying home brewing equipment because housewives, you brewed your beers. That's what you drank. Water wasn't so good. And here in Cleveland, we've got the Beer of Cleveland and also Pride of Kentucky whiskey. In 1919, baseball's first season under Prohibition, these advertisements disappear, which allows for the expansion of advertising in other categories. These upcoming cards are from the same three cities, Pittsburgh, Boston, and Cleveland. So Pittsburgh, we have alternate beverages showing up, mineral water and orange soda. Some nice child's drawings there. We get to Boston, ginger ale, Canada Dry ginger ale was very popular during during Prohibition. And we also see room for other new advertisers coming. Here is where we have the tobacco ads rising, Old Gold, Chesterfield. And in Cleveland, it's banks and cars. There are 8 ads here, 2 of them are automobiles, and all but one other has a bank of some sort in it. Okay, so they go with their own direction there. In 1933, the 21st Amendment's ratified with the ending of Prohibition, thank you to Utah, so the beer is back in 1934, right? That depends upon where you are. In Boston, how long do you think it's going to take to displace, to displace the cigarette ads? That's going to be a while before they get bumped back out. Here in Cleveland, we have still ginger ale and coffee being advertised. This is after the end of Prohibition. Finally, we get to Pittsburgh, and yes, we do have 2 local beers, not Iron City yet. And if we look at St. Louis, the home of the King of Beers, which was advertising in baseball scorecards in the 19th century, yes, Budweiser does show up in 34. But all in all, alcohol ads are relatively rare in 34. But they do start showing up more frequently in 35. And if you look at the back of this, it's the back of a Chicago program from 35. It's still a little hush-hush. Buy it, have it delivered home. You don't get to find out that it's beer until you read this little tiny stuff at the bottom. If you look at this scorecard in the inside, there is not a single alcohol ad there. This is the only ad for it. So Prohibition is something we're still remembering. Now, another important historic era to consider is the Great Depression. As I scan the scorecards of the 30s, you don't see much at all. The only ad I found, GGG clothes, again, got to be well-dressed. In 1933, our New Deal, that's the only semi-direct reference to the Depression here. But since baseball's often viewed as an escape from other aspects of life, the lack of references probably isn't that surprising. And it might tell us how important that escape was during the Depression. Because how many people do you think in the 1930s were in the market for furs? In Detroit and in Brooklyn as well, we have fur coat ads. I would suggest this is part of the illusion of everything's fine in the world of baseball. There are certainly other events that took place during our study period, mostly importantly World War II, that are reflected in their own ways in baseball cards, but our time limit means that if you want these details, you'll have to check up on the retro sheet website. We will post the long version of this talk with the images sometime in the next few weeks. And there's some really good ones. So, after all this analysis, after all looking at all these hundreds of scorecards, what have we learned about ourselves as fans of the first part of the 20th century? As a geographer, I have to say, geography matters. The ads are different in Detroit than in Cincinnati, than in New York. Second, Terrence Mann was right. Baseball is how we mark time. We can see how the auto industry rises. We can see the impact of the Volstead Act on our response to war. And we can make some sweeping generalizations. We are well-dressed. We like cars. Our big vices are tobacco and alcohol. And we love the game of baseball, especially in Baltimore. Thank you. Any questions?
Mm-hmm. So I didn't know if the picture is like or not.
So I don't care.
Anyway, I noticed there was one railroad ad that depicted the typical black, railroad employee. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you noticed stereotypical depictions in ads, not just of black people, but of anybody, and if there were any trends that...
In this period, not really any trends. I mean, you do see some things, like you said, in the railroad ad, but it's nothing that really jumped out. I expect that you might see more transitions a little bit later in time.
Are you interested in continuing the study by looking at other parts of the country? Because, some of us could probably bury you. And would that be killing the love, or would that be killing you with kindness?
Right now I'm thinking it might be killing me with kindness. It's a nice idea, but I think. But thank you.
Besides Austin's dog bread, what was the most unusual ad or product across your research?
They were awesome. There were opium treatment centers for opium addiction. And that was in Washington, D.C., by the way. If you look at the longer moonshine washing fluid, so that you could have the most sanitation was a big thing in the 30s, apparently. Oh, and baldness treatments. There were a couple of cities, Pittsburgh being the big one, that had baldness treatments. But there are some really funny ones.
Look at all the smog there.
Maybe. But undertakers. Doesn't somebody have undertakers?
Thank you.
Something.
I'm very impressed by your presentation.
Thank you.
Given all the ads of clothing and financial institutions, is there this inherent class bias, I guess, in who these scorecards were marketed to?
I think probably so, although some of that may also be the illusion. I think there is that bias when you look at the clothes.
Hi, Dave Lippman, New York. I'm curious, did you do any research on scorecards for the Negro Leagues?
No, I didn't look at any Negro League scorecards.
I would be very interested to see the differences in their advertising.
Yeah, that would be an interesting angle. Nice and loud.
Sorry.
Oh, whoop.
Do you have any further questions? Please feel free to continue the conversation outside.